When I was about 8 or 9 years old, I remember I was playing basketball with some of my friends, my neighbors, probably even a regular game. I never could find an even number of people to play basketball. I don't know how that was, but it seemed to happen that way more often than not. And I remember one of the other neighborhood kids came and kind of stopped by. And he lived down the street from me. He was never particularly nice to me. And he had nicer things than I did. He had no brothers or sisters, and I think both of his parents may have worked. I never actually saw his parents around anywhere, but he used to. I knew he had nicer things than me because he always told me he had nicer things than me. He explained to me how he had two bicycles and a dirt bike and a jet ski and two rooms and filled with all kinds of toys. I saw it. I mean, it's not that he was just making these things up. He had all these things. I didn't have any siblings, sir. I didn't spend a lot of time with the rest of us. Usually, he sort of insulted us to our face and try and make us feel small. But I remember he stopped by. We were playing basketball. And he made a comment about how we should go play at his house because he had a nicer basketball hoop and a better court and a nicer basketball. And we ignored it, really, in so many ways. We didn't really feel the need to pick up our game and travel. We were happy where we were happy with what we were doing, and we were enjoying ourselves. And he kind of lingered. And he waited. I don't know what he was waiting for, but he waited. And the ball came to me, and I kind of stopped play, and I looked at him and said, "Well, do you want to join us or not?" It was fascinating because he looked at me as if I had just told him he had a new growth growing out of his neck. You know, I mean, it was a bewilderment and a confusion. It just seemed kind of confused by the entire sentence. So I waited, and I finally said, "Well, are you or aren't you?" And he joined us in play. And I would love to tell you that that was some kind of wonderful turning point, and we started to become friends, and things became better. I would love to tell you that overcame barriers and obstacles, and we were all better for it. None of those things happened. He went on to become a frustrating player in basketball. He went on to be the frustrating neighbor down the street who always tried to make me feel small and tell me that he had better stuff than me. I mean, that continued on. About a year later, I moved away, and I never saw him again. I can't remember his last name anymore. I had no idea what he made of himself or what happened. What I do know is that in that moment, we're called to live in God's love and care. Really wasn't much of a thought for me. In fact, I probably wouldn't even think much about it, except that when I got home that day, it was summer, we were out all day, but when I got home that day, my mother was waiting for me, which was different. Probably because I was coming in a little later than I was supposed to. I don't know. Come back at dark is such a vague term, so, you know, what is really the R? Mom and Dad's definition, my definition, apparently didn't line up. So when I got home, I thought I was in trouble because I was pushing the envelope on the definition of dark. And my mother was there, and she said, I saw what you did today. When she said that, all I could think of was the hot dog that I had for lunch that I was told not to have, because apparently I'm not supposed to have hot dogs 4 days in a row for lunch. But that's all I could think of. She said, "I'm really proud of you." I was still focused on the hot dog, so I was very confused why that would be. But she pointed out what it is that she saw, and she told me, honestly, it hadn't even really stopped to make me think, but it was one of those moments that really struck my mother, and she brought it up a couple of times afterwards, but it was incredible to me. Because at the very heart of who we are, start to finish, what we should always be focused on, is exactly what the scholar of the law was worried about when he asked Jesus. What does it take to have eternal life? So on the scholar's mind, he says, what must I do to inherit this eternal life? And what is the answer? Of course, Jesus challenges him. He wants him to think. He says, what do you think it is? Not that it's a trap, but he wants him to genuinely think about it. I mean, this scholar is clearly a well-read scholar because he knew how to respond. He said, you should love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your being, with all your strength, with all your mind, and your neighbor as yourself. And Jesus says, yeah, that's it. And then, of course, it goes back to, who is that neighbor? Who is it that we are supposed to love as ourselves? Who is it that we are supposed to live in this love and be so focused on trying to live in a love for God that we have a capacity to share a love that we have for God with our neighbor, just as God shares his love with us. You know, it's a terrifying thing to me, but it's come up a lot this week. It's kind of on my mind, and it keeps coming up over and over again. I see it more and more on social media, probably because I don't watch as much of the news as some people do, but I see it, and it's constant. We're living in an increasingly violent time that seems to express itself in these bursts of terrible, terrible violence. Just terrifying, remarkable violence. And of course, at the moment if it happens, there's always that outcry saying, well, I just never thought that this would happen. I just can't imagine this kind of violence happening. I couldn't imagine someone doing something so terrible. And of course, I think back. I think back to my childhood and growing up, not in a nostalgia way that I just want to tell you that those days were so much better. But actually, I think back to my childhood and I think to myself, we weren't always very nice to each other as children either. And see, in my generation when I grew up, parents got yelled at for correcting other people's children. So I watched as a lot of my friends were not corrected when they said increasingly mean things. And I watched as division grew, not unity. I watched as we became further separated, more and more from each other, instead of brought closer together. My mom and dad described how they knew everyone on the block. By the time I was 12, my parents knew no one on the block. I did. I went out every day and I met neighbors. I was like a creepy kid that stood over you while you were gardening and asked you what you were doing, trying to figure out what you were doing, because I didn't understand gardening. Largely because my father enjoyed gardening, I didn't understand why he enjoyed it either, but you know, apparently a lot of the neighbors did, and I couldn't figure it out. From the time I was 12 until the time that I was 18 and I left for college, I knew the name, the occupation, the address, and a brief history of every person who lived on my street. Of course, there were only 10 people, so it really wasn't that hard, but I knew them. We were part of a homeschooling group. I knew every person in the homeschooling group. I knew something about every family. I knew how to get a hold of them. I knew what time it was best to call them. I knew what time it wasn't best to call them. I knew the members of my church community. I was a religious ed instructor, an altar boy trainer, a cantor, and a server myself. I knew every server by name. I knew most of the cantors. And I knew almost every parent who had a child serving. And the thing that strikes me when we come back to this gospel over and over again, the thing that makes me most disheartened about this gospel is that every time I hear it, outside of the context of church, it's a reminder to me that I'm supposed to be the charitable one. It's always encouraging when people come up to you and yell at you and say, aren't you supposed to be the Christian? Aren't you supposed to be the one who loves? Why are you not being loving? Which, let me tell you, it's always easiest to be loving when someone's screaming at you. That's absolutely the best time to be loving, because it's so encouraging. But it strikes me as odd that the time I hear about it most is the time that apparently it's me that apparently isn't loving enough. When, in truth be told, what it should be is at the very heart of our life in such a way that it isn't a question of whether or not someone asks us if we're loving, but should be able to witness by our very life that we care about something. The thing that strikes me as remarkable more and more is that as we continue on and we continue to witness these terrible, bizarre, and horrible acts of violence, instead of thinking to ourselves, how's my neighbor doing? Instead we think to ourselves, well, how do I protect myself? Or how do I ensure that this never happens again? And I think while we're asking the right idea, I think we're asking specifically the wrong question. Instead of saying, what law can we pass to make sure that we're safe? Instead of saying, how do we make sure that this never happens again by a new education program? Honestly, the first question that comes to my mind is, how is my neighbor today? How are my siblings? Did I tell my parents that I love them? I mean, I could say to myself, well, of course they don't love them. I tell them all the time. But what about today? just the ones that live on my block, but the people that I encounter on a regular basis. If I greeted people as I go through the day, do I know that people are getting along? It's a fascinating thing to me because as we look at these terrible tragedies, one of the things that always seems to point out is a sense of isolation. And I don't think that if we're so isolated that we've forgotten that we're supposed to love our neighbor, we're really starting to get the idea of exactly what it is we're being challenged with this gospel. Fascinating thing about it is at the very heart of who we are as a people of God, at the very heart of who we are as children of God, totally dedicated to Him, peculiarly His own, is that every single day we should be waking up and asking ourselves, how am I going to live in love for God today? And does that mean I'm going to live with my neighbor as well? I mean, it's a big commitment to love our neighbor, love our God with everything. Our whole heart, our whole being, our whole strength, our whole mind. Every single part that we have, we are supposed to pour out in total, radical love for God. So that we can love our neighbor as ourselves. Fascinating thing is we can still talk about how we love that neighbor that's easy to love. But what about the one that's harder to love? What about the one that cuts us off on the road, makes us break, and suddenly we're not so sure that we like that person anymore? What about the coworker that just gets on our nerves? We don't necessarily don't like them, but we just don't like what they have to say. What about that person in church that we won't sit next to? You know, because they're sinners. That neighbor we find particularly troublesome to like. That neighbor we find particularly difficult to love. How do we show our love for them? Do not underestimate that the parable given to us of the man traveling from Jerusalem to Jericho was beaten and stripped. And while I don't know a lot of highway robbers that actually pull people over on a highway anymore, mugging is still a real thing. I think we can actually begin to show our love for our neighbor long before we find a half-alive corpse on the side of the road. I think we can start a lot better just trying to ensure that the people nearest us know that they're not alone. Know that they don't have to be totally isolated themselves. And that loving our God with our whole heart, our whole being, our whole strength, our whole strength is something that very much begins within a small community. It's not about being able to refer someone to Vincent and Paul or calling the church for help or going to the local food pantry. Those are all necessary things, don't get me wrong, but we should not be so disassociated ourselves to try and separate ourselves from the events that we suddenly don't stop to think that there is so much more need than just those points of immediacy. You know, it's a fascinating thing with Blessed Mother Teresa actually pointed out. She said that after visiting the United States extensively, she said that she had never met a country so poor in all of her life. And this is a woman who serves in India. It's not a great sign for us. She said she'd never met a country so poor with so much money. She said that we lacked even the simplest of love. If we truly are to live that life of Christianity, if we truly are to exemplify what it is that we're supposed to do to inherit eternal life, and really, all of us should be able to ask ourselves each and every day, am I building towards eternal life? What we should be asking ourselves is, am I loving God with all of our heart, with all of our strength, with all of our being, with all of our mind? Do we love our neighbor as ourselves? Because that is the way to eternal life. I'm not asking you to like everybody. I have 5 brothers and sisters, trust me, at the end of the day sometimes I would tell them, I love you, but man, I do not like you right now. And we shouldn't see this as an indictment. I'm not trying to make everyone suddenly stare and do some navel gazing and try and decide just how bad they should feel, but genuinely it's a challenge and invitation, not about what you have or haven't done yesterday, but But I want you to consider exactly what we're going to do today and in the future. How are we going to live in love of our neighbor? You know, the thing that bothers me most of all about all of these dark and disturbing news stories of terrible violence is there's always that implied statement towards the end. There's always that overhanging idea. What's next? Where will it happen next? How will it happen next? And all I think to myself is, wow, that is some good television to get that much fear that generated. But after I move past that observation, I think to myself, I think we should be a whole lot less focused on what's next. And a whole lot more focused on the idea of, how do I show my love for my community today? It's not that we all have to run out and donate to the United Way tomorrow. I think it has a whole lot more to do with asking, how's the person next to me doing? And I say this with a smile on my face and a certain sense of irony, because I know in about, I don't know, 30 minutes or so, we're all going to try and race out of that parking lot like it's on fire. So, you know, there's not usually a whole lot of charity trying to get out the parking lot door. I know that, because half the people try and walk out the door before I do, just to make sure they beat me. But, you know, after you've wrestled your way out of the parking lot and gotten past all of that joy, can we live a love for our neighbor today? Can we focus enough to say that the answers to our problems, the answer to the challenge we face, as Deuteronomy warns us, they're not some answer in the sky that we have to go send someone to find. It's not some magic guru who's going to show up tomorrow and say all of our problems are gone. It's not across the sea and we suddenly have to send some envoy to figure out how it's going to be all better. No, the problem's in front of us. The words are actually already in our mouths and in our hearts. We have got to carry it out. What is that? Well, we wish that one thing is that we should long for eternal life, and we do that by loving God with our whole heart, with our whole strength, with our whole mind, our whole self, and love our neighbor as ourselves.